Good morning. It's Friday, April 4th. What's in your wallet? Not this card yet, but soon it may be the first locally issued Europay, MasterCard, and Visa-enabled credit card. We'll hear why EMV technology is the gold standard for credit card security. A more secure daily life is the point of the People's Walk. The Dean of St. Andrew's Cathedral, Walter Brownridge, explains what several coalitions hope will result from their march to spotlight the needs of the poor.
Then we'll review the infamous Massey Kahahavai case profiled in a new book. It just proves that after 80 years, the trial and its aftermath still awaken curiosity and anger. That's the Cure Conversation for Day 3 of Challenge 2014. I'm Chris Vander.
I'm Beth Ann Koslovich. Now the news.
Good morning and welcome to The Conversation. I'm Chris Vander Kuur. Good morning, Beth Ann.
Good morning, Chris.
This is quite a significant anniversary, and those of us who lived through it will never forget it.
And you would be speaking of you.
I would.
And the anniversary is the assassination of Martin Luther King Jr.
You bet.
Well, we're going to take that up in a way that hopefully is not going to recapitulate some of the real sadness around that event, but to take that and to do something better that Dr. King wanted to have happen, and that was planned before he was assassinated. 47 years ago, the Poor People's Campaign sought to gain economic justice for people of all colors, genders, ages, and sexual orientations. It was organized by Martin Luther King Jr. and the Southern Christian Leadership Conference. It was planned for spring 1968. And then carried out following King's assassination. Many of the issues haven't changed in almost five decades, and tonight, several Hawaii coalitions will mark today's anniversary with the People's March at the state capitol. The Very Reverend Walter Brownridge is the Dean of the Cathedral of St. Andrews and one of the organizers. He joins us this morning. Good to see you again.
Good to see you, Beth Ann. Good to see you, Chris.
You know, when we look at this date, and even though there are some of us who weren't cognizant of any of this before, because some of us weren't here, but to certainly note that this had a very profound effect on people who did experience it. But beyond that, the fact that in some ways what Dr. King was trying to accomplish might have gotten just sort of, you know, slid away for a little bit, and after five decades almost, these same issues keep resurfacing. The issues of social justice, that's the newer term that people like to use. Specifically for Hawaii, as we look at tonight's event at the Capitol and what several coalitions are hoping to accomplish, this goes far beyond just a lot of the attention that's been paid to the minimum wage.
Yes. Well, you know, the thing is, and I was a child at the time of King's assassination, and a lot of us think that Dr. King wouldn't want people today to reminisce about his death and the sadness of it. I mean, it's unavoidable, but he would want to challenge people, you know, what are you doing about the conditions? He was in Memphis because of a sanitation worker strike, the poorest workers in the city of Memphis. He was planning this Poor People's March for later because he saw that not only racism, militarism, and poverty were the great ills of American society. And so he felt that that was the great hope for all of America to confront that. In Hawaii, you know, you've got a situation where if you work 40 hours a week but you're at that minimum wage, you're going to be earning, your income is 16% below the poverty line. It's one of the factors that causes Hawaiians to have over 17%, 17.3, I believe, of our state is at that poverty level. It's the ninth poorest in the nation. So this is a challenge. Some state, you know, it depends how you count it, but because of the cost of living, and some state legislatures believe we're have the lowest wage and sort of real income of what you're earnings can supply. So the coalition of which I'm part of, Faith Action for Community Equity, a lot of unions, Common Cause, the Appleseed Foundation, have been promoting a living wage, not as a panacea. It's actually still not a living wage for what it is to cost in Hawaii, but for people not only in the restaurant and hotel industries, but home health care workers and so many other places who don't make a decent income because the minimum wage here is so low and hasn't been increased in a while. So this march is to commemorate Dr. King's death in the way of carrying on his legacy of caring for the least among us in the community. So that's why we're doing this evening.
Or at least trying to carry on that legacy. In some cases, that's been thwarted. I mean, the fact that we've gone 10 years without any increase in the minimum wage has many of those who are supporting a minimum wage hike or phase in. But still looking at how that's phased in and the other components of what it means to have some basic parts of your life covered, there's still some empty there.
Yeah, I'm a faith leader. I might have been a lawyer and I may know something about policy, but as a faith leader, you know, there will be people, economists and others can talk about some of the particulars. And this question, I know, is contentious now about how long will it take to phase in. We think 4 years is too long. That's too long. And because people in the meantime are going to still be suffering, you know, trying to, you know, get transportation to work, take care of basic needs of health and food and so on. We hope that wise heads prevail, that justice prevails, and we hope, more importantly, that those who have the most funds to lobby and organize against this are not successful. It's nothing personal about those who do well, but it is about really a justice issue for those who care for us. I mean, not just those in the hospitality industry, as I said before, but, you know, people who care for our elderly and infirmed, who want to stay in their homes or live in nursing homes and so on. It's a challenge.
Well, it's been a challenge for quite a while, as we've seen the inequality the lack of equality in so many ways. But that's more from perhaps a legal standpoint. From a real economic standpoint, inequality has been growing over decades and decades.
Absolutely.
We have an ongoing conversation with Neil Milner about what that looks like in the United States and globally, and how all of this is inextricably linked. So what do we do in Hawaii when we think that we are such a caring community, that we take care of our own, and that we are far away from everybody else, so we have to take care of our own, and yet we see statistics that look like this? What does that say about us?
I think it's a human thing that we want to persuade ourselves that we are different or better. And you said it is a global problem. It's a deep American problem, but it's a Hawaii problem, income inequality. And it's a great ill. This film that Robert Reich narrated called Inequality for All, if you haven't seen it, I really encourage you to, because it doesn't come to Hawaii, but it shows the American context. And then when you look at the statistics in Hawaii, we are not better than any, and in many ways, as we've noted, worse than what happens on the other 48 contiguous states. And I think what it says is that we don't like to confront the uncomfortable or inconvenient truths about ourselves, that we do promote sometimes greed and self-interest over caring for others, that we sometimes may use phrases like aloha and caring for each other. That may be on a personal level, but institutionally and structurally, you know, quoting the Bible here, where your treasure is, there's your heart. And Jesus said that, and that talks about, putting real economic interests. And sometimes that may be slightly uncomfortable for some people who could afford it to give, and give back to the community, and to, in our structures, our laws should say that people who work should earn a decent wage. The workers deserve to be paid at a wage that they can live on.
Well, we wish you all the best with tonight's march.
Thank you. I encourage people to come out 4 o'clock to the rotunda at the Capitol.
And we'll post all of that on our Facebook page and on HPR2. Thank you for joining us this morning.
You're very welcome. Thank you for having me.
The very Reverend Walter Brownridge is the Dean of the Cathedral of St. Andrews in Honolulu. He's also one of the organizers of tonight's People's March at the State Capitol.
Yeah, I know. Interesting conversation with Father Walter Brownridge about tonight's event at the Capitol, celebrating Dr. Martin Luther King and his legacy, and also his fight for equality and minimum wage and all the other things. The numbers are really staggering. People that make the minimum wage here in Hawaii and having a really tough time of it. And they're working. I mean, they deserve to have something. They're working 40 hours a week, and they can't keep their heads above water. Every morning, the conversation strikes this kind of thought when you tune in to them. So great, great program. If you enjoy the conversation every day from 8 until 9, give us a call here at 941-3689. 941-3689, and toll free from the Neighbor Islands, 1-877-941-3689, in support of the conversation. Great topic. Love it. Wayne Yoshioka, HPR News. Good morning, my friend. How are you?
Good morning. You know, a lot of the conversation about the minimum wage is that either way, the society will pay for it, either through social services or through higher costs associated with raising the minimum wage. So either way, it's something that, you know, you're going to have to pay for anyway. So just support it.
Absolutely. And it's the same thing here with Hawaiian Public Radio. They kind of, not necessarily minimum wage, but, you know, we know that a lot of people listen. You know, 180,000 listeners that we have per week. That's a lot. That is a lot. That's a staggering number. And the breakdown right now is about 60-40. In other words, of all the pledges that are coming in, HPR 1 gets about 60 and we get 40. To me, I'm about fairness, man. I want 50-50. That's what I want. And if not, I want to flip it around because I have a lot of time invested in HPR, too. Nothing personal, Judy Anderson. She's with us here at the table, host of Evening Concert. But, you know, that being said, a lot more people listen to HPR, too, because of all the variety of programs that we have and the talk shows and just like this particular show in the morning that reaches out to the entire state. It's not Oahu-centric. The conversation is all about including the entire state. If you support the conversation, give us a call. If you've been on the conversation and your organization or you have benefited and we have benefited from the message that you've given us via the conversation, now's your time to step up and support it, because this is a show that takes a lot of man hours to put on. Most people don't realize when they watch a show, regardless of what it is, on the radio, television, anywhere, the amount of time and effort that's put on to just pull off a 4 or 5 minute piece. If you support that and you believe in it, we'd love to hear from you. 941-3689 and toll free from the Neighbor Islands, 1-877-941-3689. We have $380 to go on HPR volunteer Maureen Schaefer's generous gift. She's on the phone right now, as a matter of fact, talking to someone who wants to make a pledge. We need to hear from you now. We know that this is Aloha Friday and you're probably thinking in advance what you're going to do for the weekend. But if you call us now, you can enjoy your weekend and it's going to be a lot easier because you've done your part. And if you've already done your part, remember that we are looking for plus one. Plus one is all about if you're a member of Hawaii Public Radio, you're a sustaining member, or you've made early pledges, or any one of these things that you've been involved throughout the years with HPR, bring aboard a friend. It'll make it that much easier, that much quicker to get us to the halfway point. The halfway point, if we continue where we're at right now by hitting our goals, and we have a lofty goal for these 3 hours, and we've just made a tiny little chip off of where we need to be. We needed to get $5,000 for these 3 hours, and we've had a few calls, and we appreciate those calls, but we need to keep those phones nice and busy hitting our goals so that we can hit the halfway point. Boy, I'd like to do it by this afternoon, close of business, but that's going to take some heavy lifting. And you know what, Wayne, Judy, we've done all that we can do. We've put the volunteers in place to answer the phones. We have all the programs set up to where we can, unfortunately, interrupt them and bring our message to you. And you show us appreciation by calling 941-3689 or calling us from the Neighbor Islands, 1-877-941-3689. That's how it works. That's how it works. So that's pretty much where we're at. Wayne?
Ray, we have 180,000 people tune in to HPR for 1 week, and our membership is something like 11,000. So just do the math. If we just get half of those people to just sign up and pledge your support to Hawaii Public Radio, we will be there. We will be there. 941-3689 on Oahu, 877-941-3689 from the neighbor islands. Call now.
You know, Ray, I work on the HPR 1 side of the house, but I certainly listen to some HPR 2 programs, and the conversation is one that is important to me. And one of the reasons is that in commercial news reporting, so much now they're going for sensationalism. And what the conversation does is bring to us the news that is meaningful to us. And it's something that you cannot get from any other source. It's not just local, it's meaningful.
Absolutely. And just in this piece that we just heard, the first piece out of the conversation talking with Father Walter Brownridge, if we didn't know about it, there wouldn't be that many people tonight at the Capitol building, you know, getting involved in the things that are going on. Awareness. That's what this is all about, awareness. Give us a call, 941-3689. Toll free from the neighbor islands, 1-877-941-3689. Do your part. Bring somebody aboard, plus one. Help us get to the halfway point, hopefully by this afternoon or early tomorrow. It's all up to you. We're waiting to hear from you. If you're listening to me right now, we're waiting to hear from you. $260 to go to take this $500 matching gift off the table. Now back to the conversation, and thanks.
And thank you, Ray. This is The Conversation on HPR 2. They say history is a story told by the victors, and the so-called Massey case is a prime example. An alleged rape and a murder motivated by revenge for which the killers went free. The case is more than a snapshot of race relations in 1930s Hawaii. It's what author John Rosa calls an open wound, one that continues to color the way we look at life in our islands today. His new book is called Local Story, The Massey Kahahawai Case and the Culture of History, and he's with us this morning. Good morning, John.
Oh, good morning. Thanks for having me.
The first thing that struck me about your book was that you're the first time an author has referred to it as the Massey Kahahawai Case, as opposed to just the Massey case, and after all, Kahahawai is the guy who got killed.
Yes. Actually, I'm not quite the first. There is a small pamphlet called The Navy and the Massey Kahahawai Case, which was written by a labor activist and teacher, John Reinecke, back in the early 50s when the Majors Palakiku case was discussed, and there were parallels there. But yes, it's too often, and I think it's just a matter of shorthand that people refer to the case as the Massey case, but it is Joseph Kahahawai who suffers the most.
But I think much of the emphasis in the way the story was covered had to do with this, you know, the alleged victim of rape rather than the proven victim of murder.
Sure.
That's a distinct difference.
Sure, sure. And media coverage is actually something that I take a look at in the book. I wrote this book in a number of places in California and Arizona when I was teaching in those places, but also I'm from Hawaii. And what I saw is the way in which newspapers on the continental U.S. versus some newspapers in Hawaii really characterize things differently.
I imagine, and the, you know, the racial climate of the time. Let's just recap the story briefly. A young white woman, Navy wife, 20 years old, wanders away from a party, comes back bruised and allegedly violated.
Right.
And?
Well, the challenge here is to tell the story really quickly and briefly and yet move on to other issues. Mm-hmm. Thalia Massey alleges that she's been raped. We're not entirely sure if she was, but she definitely was beaten. Mm-hmm. And to make a long story short, five young local men are accused of raping her. Two are Native Hawaiian, two are Japanese, and one is part Hawaiian and Chinese. So what I chose to do when I came across the case in the 90s, reading about it, is to take a look at why, especially in Hawaii, the case has been discussed as the first time this term local is used, to contrast people in Hawaii with the continental U.S., and furthermore, to contrast working-class Native Hawaiians and Asian and Portuguese and Puerto Rican individuals from the Kama'aina elite in Hawaii.
The division existed before and after, but are you saying that the terminology came into use largely as a result of this, the notoriety of this story?
I believe so. I think what I show in the book, too, is that there are a variety of ways in which this story works very, very well as a local story. The tensions between the territory and the continental U.S., also the neighborhoods involved, right? The boys, so to speak, are from Kalihipalama.
Mm-hmm.
Thalia Massey and her family are living in Manoa at the time, so there's a class difference. And yet they come together in Waikiki where there's the potential for violence because you have groups intermingling. And I'm not the first to use the term local and talk about the case. Eric Yamamoto, who's a lawyer and law professor, did a senior thesis. And when he interviewed a very prominent University of Hawaii sociologist, Andrew Lind, who was actually working during the 30s, it was Andrew Lind who said, you know, this term local usually probably gets its start round about the time of the Massey case.
Just to bookend this story a little bit for people who may not remember the details, the five local men, the night of the alleged rape, were picked up by police, brought to Thalia Massey, and she was asked, were these the guys who did it?
Yes.
And she said yes. They were later kidnapped, and one was later kidnapped and murdered by the mother and husband of the alleged rape victim.
Yes.
And their punishment was to sit in the governor's office for an hour, right?
Yes, ultimately.
So what does that tell you about race relations at the time? You know, it gets into that whole American strain of, you know, violating the white woman and, you know.
Yes. There are many, many ways in which this story plays out on a number of different levels, talking about the political weakness of the territory of Hawaii versus the continental U.S., for example.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, you know, not just issues of race, but also of gender, right?
Yeah.
In terms of divisions and fears, there's always the fear of the rape of a white woman by non-white men. So this plays very, very deeply into the general American consciousness, especially in the 30s.
It's a deep strain. I mean, I was thinking of the film Birth of a Nation, which pivots on the terror of, you know, induced by that whole idea.
Right, right.
There's an awful lot of this lingering today, isn't there?
I think there is, but it's, as I've told my students and discussed with, you know, friends and community members, you know, human relations are always going to be what they are, but the media forms and the ways in which we couch our stories and tell them and express them directly or indirectly, those are things that really change over time. And as a historian, that's what I really wanted to grapple with.
Most historians understand that just because a story has been widely covered, especially widely covered at the time, it doesn't mean that everybody's gotten to the bottom of a story, right?
Right, and you also have to consider what it means to get to the bottom of a story. Trained as an academic historian, you know, in the 90s, there was all this concern about, you know, can we ever achieve objectivity?
Yeah.
And in a way, you know, it's kind of a false hope. We also have to realize that facts are there, but we, as storytellers, as historians, we pick the facts that we want to choose and highlight according to the values and the interests of our times. So that's what really interested me. And also the fact that, you know, I'm born in the late 60s, my mother's generation in the 40s, we were not directly tied to the case. And as a result, we never heard about the case until it was starting to be discussed more publicly in the mid to late 1980s. So why certain histories are hidden for a while and yet decades later openly discussed was also very, very interesting.
Well, good history always needs revising, doesn't it, John?
True.
Thanks very much for coming in with us this morning. Good to talk to you.
Thank you.
John Rosa is an assistant professor of history at UH Manoa, whose new book, published by the University of Hawaii Press, is Local Story, the Massey Kahawai Case and the Culture of History. You can find out more about it at hpr2.org.
Support for Hawaii Public Radio comes from Hawaii Pacific Health, a not-for-profit healthcare network of hospitals, clinics, physicians, and other caregivers serving Hawaii and the Pacific region. Learn more at hawaiipacifichealth.org.
As you may be aware, today is the Challenge 2014 Say a Nice Thing About a Lawyer Day. That's when you make a pledge, compliment an attorney, and then that attorney is contacted to match the pledge. It was the brainchild of a couple of lawyers who are very fond of their favorite nonprofit, HPR. So for today's backyard quiz, we're going to take a look at our state's oldest not-for-profit law firm. In the summer of 1950, Judge Betty Fattusik contacted the state's Bar Association. She outlined her ideas for providing legal services to people with limited or, in some cases, non-existent finances. The executive committee liked her proposal and agreed to establish a nonprofit law firm. The treasurer of the Territory of Hawaii then issued a charter for it and designated C. Nils Tavares as president and Betty Fattusik as secretary. On March 12, 1950, the firm's first offices were opened near the Better Business Bureau on Alakea Street. And for this morning's backyard quiz, we'd like you to name the firm. Post it on Facebook at Hawaii Conversation, or stay tuned for the answer in the next half hour.
And a good morning to you on this day three of Challenge 2014. Ray Cruz with you here at Pledge Central, HPR2, and I'm joined by Wayne Yoshioka of our HPR News Department.
Good morning, Ray.
Good morning, Wayne. And Judy Anderson, HPR1, host of Evening Concert.
Good morning, Ray and Wayne.
I just want to talk to you, the person that's listening to my voice right now, and just kind of give you the anatomy of a pledge drive and how a pledge break works in support of a show like The Conversation. You know, as we set this pledge drive up, there's the minute we said that our last pledge drive was over, we started planning this pledge drive. And every pledge drive, we have loftier goals to meet, and they need to be met so that we can continue to keep this station on the air for the next 6 months. And we just don't say that just to say it. We mean it, because that's what it's all about. And we've seen this station grow, the listenership. We've seen a program like The Conversation grow, where they have 1,800 guests a year come on and get their message out to their listeners and people who want to have their voice heard. And we only have an hour each day of this pledge drive for you to show your support for a show like The Conversation. You know, it's you know, I start thinking sometimes, what does it take to have you go to your phone and who are enjoying this show? You might not enjoy that I'm interrupting your show, but this is the way we do our business. And so, you know, what is it going to take for you to pick up the phone and show that support? Did you benefit from the show by being on it, and you were so excited to have Beth Ann or Chris talk to you about your agenda and your whatever you wanted to get across to our ohana here on in Hawaii? Well, I think you should call us, 941-3689. Wayne, what do you think? Where are you at with this?
Well, we know that our listeners are socially conscious, they're curious, and they're, you know, they're really proactive people, and they want to contribute for the greater good. And I think all you need to know is our business model is that we rely on our listeners for support. Nobody else contributes except for the listener who becomes a member. And that's how this whole enterprise of Hawaii Public Radio has not only grown but has flourished, because of you. And we know that you can do this. 941-3689. This is Hawaii Public Radio. It is your community station. 877-941-3689 from the neighbor islands.
Judy, you've been a part of our pledge drives, and you know the euphoria that you get when that phone rings and you meet goals and you need to go out there and grab somebody out of the hall because we don't have nine phones are being used and we need more people and they're just ringing off the hook. Just because the magic word one of the hosts said, or maybe sometimes didn't say, it just hit a nerve, whether it was performance today. What do you think? What do you think? What do you think should make a person pick up the phone and give us a call and become a member and support this radio station?
Well, what I believe can be expressed in one word, Pono. And I think that it has to come from within you to feel like you need to do the right thing, that you cannot be happy with yourself if you are not doing the right thing. And to me, if you are using something, if you are gaining benefit from something, then you need to support it. It is that simple. The reverend who was being interviewed at the beginning of the conversation, he used some terms, greed and self-interest. And what I'm talking about is the opposite of that. It's doing the right thing. And we like to call it here enlightened self-interest.
Correct.
But you need to enable what you want. And that's what you do by supporting Hawaii Public Radio.
And it's very simple. You pick up the phone, you give us a call, 941-3689, 941-3689 locally. From the neighbor islands, 1-877-941-3689. And, you know, when you talk about Pono and you talk about all these particular things that we've just mentioned, all these incentives to get someone to call, you know, to me an incentive would be what Maureen Schaefer has done. She volunteers her time, and she has a 500, okay? We're not talking about a dollar you buy somebody a cup of coffee. We're talking $500, hard-earned dollars on the table in support of this radio station. And she's saying, here, take it. But she could just give it to us. That's not a problem. What she's saying is, take this five and multiply it and make it 1,000. It's easy math. That's believing in something. If you believe in Hawaiian Public Radio, do the right thing. Give us a call, 941-3689. Toll free from the neighbor islands, 1-877-941-3689. And Judy, some people have already done the right thing. Let's thank them for doing it.
Exactly. Mickey Crutchfield of Honolulu has called in. She's not only a new supporter, but she's also signed up to be a sustaining member, which is the most efficient way for us to handle her membership. That saves us a lot of overhead. And she decided to do the right thing. She says she's been listening for quite some time, and she listens every day. She feels that the news programs are very important to her. And this morning, she decided that she would do the right thing.
Thank you. Wayne?
We have Marcia Ray. She's a renewal from Kamuela, and she couldn't live without HPR 88.7 on the Hawaii island. Well, thank you so much, Marcia.
You know, every drive we have, we just talk about MVPs. Those two people that you're talking about, those are MVPs, people that get it. They understand it. They pick up the phone. They call 941-3689. They have an enthusiastic volunteer that says, hi, how are you? Glad you called. They take your pledge. And I tell you, the radio sounds better. Do the right thing. Do the right thing. 941-3689. Going back to the conversation. And if you call, thanks.
And thanks very much, Ray and Wayne and Judy. You know that old expression about if at first you don't succeed? Well, so does Charles DeJoux. And yes, he's trying again. He announced his candidacy for Congress to regain the seat he once held for 7 months as the result of a special election. And while history might not be on his side, Civil Beat reporter Chad Blair says there are some reasons he could just pull it off. Chad Blair joins us now for today's reality check. Good morning.
Good morning, Beth Ann.
You know, the list of what could be for Charles DeJoux is fairly long. I mean, this is not someone of whom we should be dismissive.
You know, he served in the city council, he served in the state legislature, and yes, he only got to Congress because it was a special election, remember, to replace Neil Abercrombie, who resigned to run for governor. Well, when he was running against Ed Case and Colleen Hanabusa, the Democrats, they split the vote. But DeJoux did win that race. But then since then, he lost to Hanabusa twice. So this is now his fourth time in 4 years. But there's a lot of appealing things. He is the only person running in this race who actually has served in Congress. He does have contacts in Washington. You know, he's got military experience. He served with the Army Reserves in Kandahar and Afghanistan. And Hawaii has a tendency to favor veteran candidates. Think about Tulsi Gabbard, let alone Dan Inouye, for that matter. So there's a number of strong points that Charles DeJoux has in his favor.
While he may be memorable for many, many reasons, isn't this going to come down to, Chad, whether Hawaii wants to have a Republican voice in D.C.?
Right, and I'd say right now the Republican Party nationally has all sorts of concerns within its own party, the Tea Party element actually defeating some of the more moderate Republicans. But imagine this, the House is going to stay, in all likelihood, under Republican control. There's a very good chance the Senate could fall to Republicans as well. Another good argument for Charles DeJoux might be, you know, send a Republican to Washington so that at least Hawaii has a voice, can be heard with the majority, if it is the majority party.
Another thing, talking about Republican voices, he's got Pat Saiki as the GOP party chair.
And she's one of only three people, along with DeJoux, three Republicans who actually served in Congress. In fact, she held the very same first congressional district seat that Charles DeJoux wants. Now, the local Republican Party has its own challenges. Pat Saiki is chair right now because, well, there's been a revolving door of chairs. They've had trouble getting enough candidates to win office. But Pat Saiki won twice for that race. She's experienced. She's got a lot of contacts as well. And she likes Charles DeJoux. So that could help him as well.
Do you think that she also brings a sense of gravitas to it that we haven't seen before?
I think so. I mean, she did lose a U.S. Senate race to Danikaka. She did lose a governor's race to Ben Cayetano. But I think she's still respected, really a moderate Republican, certainly not an extremist in any way. And she served for a long time as a leader in the legislature.
Well, this race keeps getting more and more interesting, and we'll have plenty to talk about. Thanks, Chad.
Thanks, Bethann.
Chad Blair reports on politics for CivilBeat.com.
Earlier in the show, we focused on Hawaii's oldest nonprofit law firm. In July 1950, Judge Betty Vitosek approached the state's Bar Association with her ideas for establishing a new public service law firm. Its purpose was to help people with limited, or in some cases non-existent, finances to receive the legal services they needed. The executive committee of the bar reviewed and accepted Vitosek's proposal and agreed to establish the state's first nonprofit law firm. On March 12, 1951, its first offices were open near the Better Business Bureau on Alakea Street. For today's quiz, we wanted to know if you could name Hawaii's oldest nonprofit law firm. The answer is the Legal Aid Society of Hawaii. And that's your quiz for Compliment a Lawyer Day of Challenge 2014. If you have a quiz for us, you can send it to talkback at hawaiipublicradio.org.
Lately, we've heard a lot about credit card security. People are wrapping their wallets in aluminum foil and buying special bags to hold them. Now, what's in your wallet could soon be getting some additional security. Some in Hawaii's financial industry are moving to the gold standard of technology, smart cards. Hawaii Federal Credit Union will be the first local institution to offer a card with a Europay, MasterCard, and Visa, or EMV, chip. CEO Andrew Rosen joins us now. Good morning.
Good morning, Bethann.
For quite a while, this technology has been available, and certainly for anybody who goes to Europe and has tried to use a standard credit card that, you know, we use a lot here in the United States, sometimes they're met with shaking heads and people who say, no, we just can't accept that one. Why have we been so slow in some ways to meet up with what Europe has been doing for quite some time?
No, you're right, Bethann. In Europe and really the rest of the world now uses this microchip technology as the standard, and it provides a lot better security. In the U.S., we're just behind the curve, and it's primarily because of the cost. The cards are more expensive, and the merchants and retailers have to replace their terminals.
But this is like 20 years behind the curve.
Exactly. We're behind. And for Hawaii State Federal Credit Union, we said it's time for us to invest the money and have a better card that's more secure for our members.
Now, I mean, in all fairness, to say that you're not the only institution in Hawaii, but you are the only local institution offering this card. Bank of Hawaii also has one, but theirs is issued through Barclays Bank.
That's right. That's right. And we really hope that all of the financial institutions in Hawaii will start issuing the more secure chip cards.
But that's going to put a lot of pressure on merchants who say that, you know, being able to take credit cards in general is an expensive proposition. But certainly, it can be even more expensive depending upon who bears the liability for fraud.
That's right. And today, the issuers, like Hawaii State Federal Credit Union, we bear all of the liability, or we cover our members in case their information is subject to fraud. So our members don't have any risk today. Moving forward, in 2015, the major issuers, Visa and MasterCard, have said any merchants that don't adopt the chip technology and use the chip readers, they're going to assume the liability for any fraud.
So really, Andrew, what's happening is their hands are being forced, in a way.
They are.
As good as this all may be, now there's a very good reason that they have to do it. Otherwise, they could potentially be liable for fraud.
Exactly. And there's already a lot of local merchants have adopted the new chip readers. There's about 120 different merchants in Hawaii that are using them today.
So how do we know who has it and who doesn't?
You just have to ask the merchant and you'll see. The mechanism is different. Instead of swiping the card and swiping the magnetic strip on the back, you actually insert the card into the reader, and in most cases, you'll enter a PIN. And that's what makes it much more secure. It requires, the reader actually authenticates the card and actually generates a new password every time you use the card.
Okay, so take me through this. Let's say that I have a brand new card from you, and it's got the reader in it. And to me, I'm thinking, well, I have to enter a password anyway. That's kind of a lot like what happens when I use my standard magnetic swipe card.
Well, today, the card that we're issuing, it has both the microchip for better security, but it also has the magnetic stripe. So you can use that card anywhere, even if the merchant doesn't have the chip reader.
But for the chip reader itself, I mean, as you say, it generates a new password every time. So what happens? And pretend that you and I are in Europe and we're all together with a bunch of people and we're the only ones that have these cards. What happens?
What happens is when you insert your card into the chip reader, the reader generates a unique password, and it authenticates the card. The microchip in your card will verify that password, and it makes sure that your card is authentic. And then you also have to enter a PIN. So it's double security to make sure that it really is an authentic card and that you, the holder of that card, have the PIN number. Now, if your card's ever lost or stolen, all you have to do is change the PIN, and that card could never be used again.
So you can take care of it before you would ever realize, perhaps, that somebody else was using it by having someone come to you and say, did you make this call? I mean, did you make this charge? When we've had various institutions who will call and say, is this really your charge? I mean, it's nice that they're being vigilant. But the minute that you realize that your card was missing, you can actually change the PIN and kill it right then.
Exactly. You change the PIN and no one else can use that card. And in Europe, this has almost completely eliminated fraud at the merchant.
And so in terms of, you know, point of sale problems with any of this in the history of what's been happening in Europe and globally with this card, not a lot of issues with it?
You know, the hackers and the fraudsters are always trying to break the code, and there's always exceptions. But this, again, in most of the world, the chip technology has almost completely eliminated the fraud. And that's why, because in the U.S. we haven't adopted this technology, we're the targets of so much of this fraud.
Is that one of the reasons why we've been seeing so much of it lately?
Exactly.
So if you had to say, okay, I mean, one thing is to say it's eliminated it, but give us a percentage of how many transactions result in fraud. Any way of being able to do that for what we see in the United States versus what has happened around the world since they've adopted this technology?
You know, it really depends on the institution. A lot of institutions put in place a lot of mechanisms to prevent fraud. For example, at Hawaii State Federal Credit Union, we actually monitor our members' credit card usage. And if we see unusual behavior that's not typical of that member, we'll ask the member. So we're always on the lookout and trying to minimize fraud. There's other things that you can now do in addition to prevent fraud. For example, with our new card, you can set up alerts. So anytime your card is used for an online purchase, you can immediately get a text message alerting you that that card's been used. So if it wasn't your transaction, you'll know something happened.
So this is putting much more control back into the hands of the consumer as opposed to having a vigilant financial institution giving you a call and asking you, did you make this purchase?
Right. So we try to look out for the best interests of our member, but ultimately giving the consumer that power is I think that's the best solution.
Now, you have this card and Banco has the card. Any other financial institutions, as you all sort of talk to each other, looking at doing this as an industry-wide standard?
You know, again, MasterCard and Visa have set a line in the sand. They've said by October of 2015, all issuers should be using the chip-based card. So I think we're going to see the rest of the industry follow very quickly.
Right, in a little over a year. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you, Bethann.
And good luck with that new card and to everyone who has a little bit more security because of it. Andrew Rosen is the President and Chief Executive Officer of the Hawaii State Federal Credit Union. The financial institution is now offering the first local EMF card to its 80,000 members. Well, that's going to do it for today and for this week. Up next week, we're going to talk about the HCDA lawsuit.
And we'll have a preview of the upcoming Filipino Film Festival and a look at the craft of making books.
I'm Bethann Kozlovich.
And I'm Chris Vandercook.
We'll see you next week and probably later on today as we go over now to Pledge Central with Ray Cruz.
Thanks, Bethann, and we are indeed back on this day three of our Pledge Drive Challenge 2014. And in our last break, we're joined here by Wayne Yoshoka. Good morning, Wayne.
Hey, good morning, Ray.
And Judy Anderson from HPR One Evening Concert. Glad you're with us, by the way.
Well, thank you.
And, you know, we dropped it a notch, the last one, but we're like that boxer who has a tough round and goes back to the corner and gets refreshed and then comes out in the next round, and he's ready to tackle it again, you know, because the one thing that we have learned, when people become members of Hawaii Public Radio, they invest in this station. We've do things to enhance the station, not only in sound and in programming, but in technology. We've done those particular things. Judy, we were talking about, since you explained it so well, I want you to share with our listeners the fact that now the technology that we have, we can use it to better and expand our sound all the way across the globe, literally. You can take HPR with you wherever you go.
Well, Ray, I was kind of taking it maybe from my perspective as my degree as a bachelor, or I have a Bachelor of Arts in Business Administration is what I'm trying to say. And it occurred to me that the value that Hawaii Public Radio had given me over the past year had increased, and I'll explain how. And that inspired me to make an extra donation above what I already had been given as a member. And what it had provided to me was that there had been some technical advances, and we now can stream live from our computers. We now have free apps available for the iPhone and the iPad, and there's an Android version that is in the approval process, almost ready to field, I believe. And because that had enhanced my experience with using HPR and making public radio more available to me, particularly when I travel and when you're on the mainland, so I decided that I needed to pay back by making another donation. So it's really kind of a business assessment there.
No, that's true, and actually, the Android is available.
It has come available now.
Correct.
Great.
Yeah, my sweet partner there, Jason Taglianetti. I mean, he's like the mad scientist working at it and trying this out. And said, "Gene, let me have your phone. Let's try it out and see if it's working." So, you know, all of these things that we talked about in our last break, where the money goes. How we invest that money. Now we're almost 100% of the state where you could hear us statewide. We have backups to the backups to the backups. You know, we keep on making things pretty much bulletproof so that we can continue to hear your favorite. You can continue to hear your favorite programs. Not only that, in time of need, we will be there when you need to hear from us. So all these things go towards you picking up the phone and calling 941-3689, 941-3689, and toll-free from the Neighbor Islands, 1-877-941-3689. And help us take this matching gift that we still have on the table. We still have this matching gift. And, I mean, in order for us to get to the halfway point of this drive, we need to be able to hit these goals in stride and just take them and put them aside and say thank you to folks like Maureen Schaefer, who's given us an additional gift of $500. Thank you, Mo. She's sitting there by the phone waiting for a call from you at 941-3689, 941-3689. You know, just one call at the dollar a day level, and we will have met this challenge. Can it be you? Should it be you? I think so. 941-3689, and toll free from the Neighbor Islands. You know, we had a challenge from Kauai, and somebody said, you know, if somebody calls in from Hawaii and makes a pledge, I'll challenge it and I'll give you an extra $100 from Kauai. Go ahead, Wayne.
It's Marty, and she's on vacation from Wyoming, and HPR is their only window to the outside world, and they will match $100 if someone calls from Kauai. Thank you, Marty. 941-3689, 877-941-3689. You know, we have a whole generation that has grown up with Hawaii Public Radio, and they have no idea that before that there was no Hawaii Public Radio, and I think we need to get that new generation going. Please give us a call. If you have grown up listening to Hawaii Public Radio, you are one of the first generations to have it all throughout your life. 941-3689 on Oahu, 877-941-3689.
As we approach the 9 o'clock hour on this Aloha Friday and day three of Challenge 2014, you're starting to see the shift changes on people coming in to take time out of their day to answer the phones and help us get to at least the halfway point of our drive. You can be part of this excitement too. Don't be on the sidelines. Don't just kind of observe the game from afar. Get in it. Believe me, the radio will sound better to you. You'll just feel good about where you are, especially if you've been someone who's been listening. You know, every time we hear the thank yous and reread the thank yous, it's over. We don't make this kind of stuff up. You know what I mean? You can't. Even though it's on radio, we have $160 to go, by the way, on that $500 matching gift. Even though it's on the radio, there's no visual there, but we're telling you, we don't make this stuff up. People say to our volunteers, I've been listening for so many years, and I felt that I had to call up. They get it. And, you know, the bottom line is, sooner or later, as long as you get it, we don't care. But it does help that you get it sooner rather than later. $160 to go on that $500 matching gift, 941-3689. You can see the excitement starting to build up here. We have three people on the phones. We have seven more phones available. Give us a call, 941-3689. Toll-free from the Neighbor Islands, 1-877-941-3689. Wayne, any last thoughts here before we go off to Science Friday?
You know, we can do this because We just have to do this. We have no other choice than to do this.
That's it.
941-3689, 877-941-3689.
Judy?
And Ray, the exciting thing about it is that as people use the technology that we're offering them, they will find that it is so much easier.
Absolutely, absolutely. 941-3689. I want to remind you that most importantly, you're tuned to member-supported Hawaii Public Radio, KIPO Honolulu, KIPM Waikapu, KHBH Kailua Kona, KIPH Hana, KIPL Lihue, and KAHU Pahala, collectively the stations of HPR2. 941-3689, $160 to go. The phone lines will be open during the program. We're going off to NPR News. Hope you join us. And if you do, thanks.